When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online. Schedule package pickups through the dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I lit a candle and started to a little flame. Dreamt you all night long, wishing you here again. Like the memories in a frame, my heart is trapped to you. Flickering while I was trembling. Starts with you on my mind till the candle burned all out. Hope never fades, never burns, no sinks. It hasn't.
In Carter Bouchard's Evidence of an Enigma 1 and 2, he documents and chronicles Sasquatch behaviors from nearly 400 witnesses from all over the North American continent. These events run the gamut, from mundane road crossings to mind-blowing quantum or paranormal skill sets. Mind speak, possible hypnosis and infrasound activity, to appearing and disappearing from view, literally just a few feet away. One family from BC, Canada, has endured 40-plus years of interactions that continue to this day. The witnesses he has interviewed wanted nothing more than a safe place to tell their stories without the fear of ridicule and scorn dished out by non-believers. He has delivered his riveting personal interactions and those of everyday people whose lives were altered forever in his two books. Quite simply, there is more to these beings than most ever imagined. Sasquatch, Evidence of an Enigma, Books 1 and 2. Get them now at www.relichominid.com. Meet the Totally Ninja Raccoons. Three raccoons who become ninjas because they already have the masks. The Totally Ninja Raccoons books are short adventures with quick chapters, specially structured to encourage reluctant readers. Each book has the Totally Ninja Raccoons encountering a cryptid. The monsters are presented in a fun, not so scary way.
I said not so scary!
Readers are encouraged to do their own research and make up their own minds about the possible existence of Bigfoot, the Jersey Devil, aliens, and more. The Totally Ninja Raccoons are available on Amazon or at your favorite bookstore. You can buy autographed copies direct from the author at kevincoolidge.org. That's kevincoolidge.org for the Totally Ninja Raccoons. Do you remember how great paranormal talk radio was in the 80s and 90s? Night Dreams Talk Radio brings back to you talk radio like you remember, with your host, Gary Anderson, broadcasting to you live from his secret compound deep in the great Northwest. Now, here's Gary.
And here I am. Well, I hope everybody's having a good one. It's the 25th of January. Boy, it seems like it was just Christmas, like yesterday. You know, we got a great guest tonight. If you like eating light bulbs, you came to the right show. But anyway, I'm going to talk a little bit about when I was in ninth grade before we bring our guest on. You know, I watched with my best friend at the time, Terry Morgan. We were sitting watching one of these old B-movies about, well, zombies and voodoo and all that stuff. And we were watching how they were taking dolls and putting these nails and needles down, you know, and all parts of the body of this doll. And then somebody would either die or they get really sick and die. Well, we had a teacher we could not stand in ninth grade, my math teacher, Mr. Bender. As soon as that movie was over, it was not late, it was an afternoon movie. We had to walk to a place called White Center in Seattle. We had to maybe walk about 2-3 miles to get to this magic store we knew about. And we go in there, and we were looking at all the magic stuff. And then Terry goes, "Look, they got voodoo dolls." So we pulled our money together and we bought a voodoo doll. We brought it back home. And we remembered, we just chanted and, you know, what young people would do at ninth grade. Well, we broke into my mom's, well, sewing basket, got these big, big needles. And we started sticking needles in the stomach of this doll, voodoo doll. And we were saying, "Die, Mr. Bender, die, Mr. Bender." You know, we were young, naive, and probably mean, too. Young, mean kids. That was on a Saturday. Well, we go to school on a Monday. And we go to our classes, and now it's third or second period. I can't remember which period it was. We go down to the portable at Denny Junior High. And there's a substitute teacher. And we're going, "Wow, I wonder why we got a substitute teacher." And she said, "Well, Mr. Bender is going to be out for a little while. He had appendix erupted. I tell you, when we got home, we were right where we had that voodoo doll hid. We took the needles out. And that was pretty much the last I ever thought about doing magic. And I'll tell you, it really scared me. Now, I don't know if it was this coincidental or if it actually happened. But I tell you what, magic is magic. Well, tonight we got a great guest on, and we're going to talk about all kinds of things about magic, the macabre, and all that stuff. We'll be right back with our guest, so don't go anyplace. Get yourself maybe a log in that fireplace, pour something nice and warm to drink. You know, get in that easy chair, prop up your feet, and we're going to go for a real ride tonight in magic on Night Dreams Talk Radio.
Does the Earth have a pulse? A new book by Dr. Michael Rampino entitled Cataclysms, A New Geology for the 21st Century, explores this question with new cutting-edge research. Rampino and other scientists have found evidence that the Earth actually pulses with cycles of movements of the Earth's plates, episodes of mountain building, changes in climate and sea levels, and even impacts of large comets. Periods of comet impacts and massive volcanism caused severe mass extinctions of life, including the disappearance of the dinosaurs 66 million years ago. These pulses of geologic activity and astronomical unrest seem to recur on a regular cycle of 27.5 million years. The recognition of these periodic cataclysms has the potential for revolutionizing the geological sciences, as Dr. Rampino describes in his new book, Cataclysms, A New Geology for the 21st Century. Available now on Amazon.
Hi, this is Val Von Torn of Metatron Power and Light. You're listening to Gary Anderson and Night Dreams Talk Radio.
And you are. And are you ready to go for a real ride? James, why don't you tell a little bit to our listeners who our guest is tonight?
Our guest tonight is Todd Robbins. Now, he is an award-winning performer spanning more than 40 years of entertaining the masses. Todd also has many stories about the macabre, and Todd not only amazes people with his magic, but also with his skill of eating light bulbs and doing mind-blowing things.
Well, Todd, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well tonight. I am really looking forward to this, to say the least.
Well, I am too. I got to ask you, Todd. I mean, you know, I heard you on my friend's show, Art Bell, back years ago. And I was really in shock. But I got to ask you a question. That voodoo doll, when I was in ninth grade, in junior high school, when we went to that magic store, we bought that voodoo doll, we stuck those pins and needles into, well, the stomach of that voodoo doll, and we were casting a spell or whatever we were doing. Was that just...
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Coincidental? Or could it actually have caused that teacher to burst his appendix?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. And I'm unusual in that I like mysteries. I enjoy a mystery for the fact is that there are things we just don't know. And hopefully, eventually, if we keep an open mind and be as inquisitive as we possibly can and really pursue the truth, maybe one day we'll, you know, little by little we start to know more and more. We're never going to know everything. And yet, hopefully one day, many things that are a mystery now will be revealed. Perhaps, is there a connection between thought and, you know, shaping reality? There are many people who believe that this is true. It's certainly, there is evidence that if you what you think of yourself definitely does have an impact upon your future, but can it affect something beyond? That's the question. Now, there are many people, it's interesting because I think there are many people like myself that are sort of right in the middle there that just appreciate mystery for mystery, because where we run into problems is when we come up with answers that we don't have the capacity to really find the truth and find the facts behind something. And it's on both sides. There are the people that will believe in just about anything, and then there are people that are hardened skeptics that their skepticism, and skepticism is a wonderful thing. It drives people forward in a very, very good way. And yet when it lapses into cynicism and its cousin sarcasm, it just poisons the well and just makes that forward movement come to a stop. It's interesting that you mention glass eating, and I know we'll talk more about this, but it's an old sideshow skill that I was very fortunate to learn a number of the old classic sideshow stunts when I was a kid growing up in Southern California. And from some old timers that happened to be like the last generation of true sideshow professionals. This is what they did for a living, year in and year out. They would perform in sideshows and carnivals and amusement parks and with circuses and things like that. And they showed me a lot of the skills, the strange techniques that allowed them to do this without doing any harm to themselves. And one of them was eating light bulbs. And I did this at a skeptics conference many years ago, a handful of years ago. And I was invited there by a man who was organizing this. And matter of fact, everyone was there because they were a fan of this gentleman. And he knew what I was doing was legit. And yet when I did this, I did it specifically to point up that fact of when skepticism lapses into cynicism. And I asked people, after passing out the light bulb so everyone could see it, having put it in a work light, a portable mechanics work light that so people could see it light up. They knew it wasn't candy. They knew it wasn't sugar because it would melt. It was definitely hot. I would have someone examine it and then bite into it and shout out on the glass. And even after that, I asked how many people think it has to be a trick, that it's impossible to eat glass. And it's amazing how many hands went up. And I found that very sad. Just because I don't care what they think about me, but the fact is they just insulted the integrity of the man that they admire, thinking that he was somehow trying to deceive them. So it's just a very, very strange world in which we live in terms of what people believe and why they believe it. And who knows exactly where the truth lies these days.
Again, eating glass, I would think when it comes time to dispose of your, bodily waste,
mm-hmm.
I mean, didn't you kind of like go through toilet paper a little bit more than normal? I mean, I would think I would hate to sit down in the library.
Way. I've eaten somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 light bulbs. I've eaten more light bulbs than anyone else in the world. And there's no porcelain left on my toilet bowl. It's sort of been sandblasted away through the years. let's leave it at that. And just, I don't want to encourage anyone to do this. And the sad fact is that I've been doing a lot. I've done it on many, many TV shows through the years. And from The Tonight Show to Penn and Teller to all over the place. And the problem is every once in a while I'll go onto YouTube or I'll get a Google alert. My name comes up and it's someone has put up a video, a kid saying, "Hey, I saw this guy doing this. His name is Todd Robbins and now I'm doing it." And it scares me because they don't know what goes into it. I mean, it's sort of like, if you're familiar with parkour, which is that remarkable ability of people to just run and jump from building to building and over obstacles and scale walls and do remarkable things. Well, they know what they're doing. And if anyone would to try that doesn't know, they're going to fall onto their face and do real injury to themselves. And it's the same thing. I don't encourage anyone to eat glass, because I learned the proper technique from an old guy who did it for over 30 years. The irony of it is I've actually done it longer than he did it. And yet the technique is very, very sound. There's a way of chewing it up and swallowing it so it doesn't cut up the mouth and throat. And then here's the real secret. There's a diet and regimen I go through every day that keeps the glass moving through my system. It takes about 2 days to go through, and it's the most dangerous of all the old sideshow stunts, such as sword swallowing or fire eating, because if anything is going wrong with those, you can stop. But once I swallow the glass, I'm playing Russian roulette for about the next 2 days as it goes through the system. As I say, I've done those thousands of light bulbs, so the technique is fairly sound. I've had no injury to my internal organs or in digestive tract. The thing that people don't realize is that it has wreaked havoc on my teeth. I have about $30,000 worth of dental work, because when biting into that, oftentimes I will get a little crack in a tooth, and all of a sudden it is rather sensitive. I've had a number of crowns I've had to put in. Since we've got a little time here, allow me to tell you a little story.
Go for it. Send
a chill up and down your spine, if you don't mind.
Go ahead. I'm ready.
I was working out in Coney Island at the sideshow there. And this was about, actually, I can tell you exactly when it was. It was the 4th of July weekend, 1994. And we would do out there about 7 or 8 shows a day. The shows were continuous. They would run about 45 minutes long. And you would do, when you get to the end of one, you start another one. And so it's what's known as a grind. It's a continuous show. And I was eating glass, and we had done, I think, about 5 shows. I guess it was about the 5th show on a Friday, the Friday, 4th of July weekend. And I bite into the glass, and I break open a tooth, and I lose a filling. I now have an exposed nerve in my mouth. So I ended up finishing the act, chewing on the other side, washing it down with water, trying to flush it on the other side, not get the water or anything on that exposed nerve. And I finished the act and got off stage. And this is before cell phones and things like that. So I went to the house phone there and called my dentist, and he wasn't in. He had taken the left early that day. And I started calling around every dentist I could find in New York, and no one was available. I tried calling the next day, but it's Saturday of 4th of July weekend. No one was there. I ended up doing another 8 shows on Saturday with an exposed nerve, another 8 shows on Sunday. And because it was 4th of July weekend, we did Monday as well. We did about 7 shows on that Monday, all with an exposed nerve, until Tuesday, when I finally could get to a dentist and get the tooth repaired. So when I hear people, my friends in New York here, which is now my home base, and I have friends that do Broadway shows, and they go, oh, we did 8 shows a week, and I'm just exhausted. I said, let me tell you a little story about the 4th of July weekend in 1994 in Coney Island. And it kind of puts them in their place. If you really want to know what being a trooper is all about, I think that's a fairly decent story.
Yeah, it is. You know, I remember one time I had a tooth. It actually broke in half, and it happened late on a Friday. And I called my dentist, and he goes, I'm out of town. And so Saturday morning, I called every dentist in the Tacoma, Washington area. Nobody was available. Yeah. Nobody. And I finally, it was hurting so bad, I said, well, one of the dentists got called back and said, okay, I'll do a pain prescription and antibiotics. And my wife had to drive about 10 miles to go get it. And, you know, I waited an hour, 2 hours. She wasn't home because she decided she was going to do shopping. And then I was looking at my pair of pliers I had because I was working on something, and it was sitting on my counter. I pulled the tooth out. And I tell you, that was really painful. But I tell you what, I'd rather go through about a half an hour's time it took to pull the tooth out myself than go for another couple hours or another day or two. So I can imagine the pain you were having. I got to ask you a question. When you were washing it down with water, did it have a little bit of vodka or something in with it?
No, because The other side of it is you got to kind of maintain your wits about you, and so it gets very, very dangerous very, very quickly. Because I was also, though I traded off most of the other things I was doing things like sword swallowing and eating fire, which I during that weekend asked someone else. So when you're doing that, you got to have your wits about you, and that you know, alcohol and you have a drink afterwards, so the celebration that you live to laugh about it and live to fight another day.
Now, when you walk, any long distance, do you hear any like glass slushing in your stomach, intestines?
No, you know.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
One light bulb is not a problem because it goes through. And like I say, there are precautions I take. However, when you're doing that much out in Coney Island, doing that many light bulbs, it starts to add up and you do feel. And there was another time I was working out there, and I would usually take the subway from Coney Island to Midtown Manhattan, where I live. But one of our performers drove every day, and she was an actress who was very, very large, and she sort of revived, even though it's a kind of a politically incorrect act to do. She revived the fat lady act in the sideshow. This is 1992. And sort of did it the way it had been traditionally done. And as a kind of a throwback, but then also put a little postmodern spin on it. And so she drove every day because it was hard for her to get around. She probably weighed, Katie, I think, was about 450, maybe between 450 and 500 pounds. She was a large woman. As a matter of fact, every Halloween for her costume, she would wrap herself in a white sheet and go as the state of Alaska. That's how big she is, folks. You're going to see her on the inside. She's going to do a little dance for you. And when she does, she's going to shake it like a bowl of your grandmother's jelly on a cold and frosty morning. Because you know it's jelly, because jam don't shake like that. Come on in and see. Anyway, so she would drive. And we had also a guy who was one of the most tattooed men in the world. His name was Mike Wilson. Had tattoos all over his body, including his head and face. I would also talk to the front, which the incorrect term, but a term everyone knows is barker, but the correct term is outside talker. So I'd be the outside talker and literally talk people into buying a ticket into the show and do spiel like you just heard me say. And I would bring on the stage, I'd bring Michael out and he'd be completely covered. He'd have a mask on and he'd have the coveralls and he would have gloves on. And I would say the reason he's covered up there is because he's got more tattoos than anyone. He is the illustrated man. And we're going to give you a little something. If you come in nice and close, he's going to show you about 1,000 tattoos. Would you like to see that, folks? Go ahead. And he would just lift his pant leg and had this remarkable illustrated every square inch of his flesh was covered on his leg, and people would see it and kind of would gasp at how many tattoos. And I said, he's got tattoos everywhere. As a matter of fact, you come in nice and close, you can see he's got tattoos on his shadow, and people would actually look for that. But anyway, so we were going to drive home, and we were getting onto the Belt Parkway in New York here, and Katie had her little car, and I'm I'm sitting in the back seat and Michael's in the front seat and Katie is driving. And we get on to the, we take the on ramp and we get onto it. And a guy is speeding like 95 miles an hour down and comes barreling up behind us. And we have to swerve and actually swerve off the roadway onto the shoulder and onto the unpaved area to avoid being hit. And it scared the daylights out of us. And we sat there for a moment, shaken by this, as the guy was swerving all over the place and speeding on past us. But we came very close to having, what probably would have been a fatal accident. And we're sitting there, and we're all kind of shaken by the experience. And I start laughing, because we just worked a full day at the sideshow. And I start laughing. And Katie turned around and said, "What are you laughing?" I said, "Because if we had been killed, the three of us, and the police came upon us, and they looked at it, and they would say, what the heck is going on here? We've got this woman who's about 500 pounds. We've got this guy who has tattoos all over his body. And then we got this normal guy sitting in the back seat. And then they do the autopsy and discover I have a stomach filled with broken glass." And so it's like, I just thought of all the questions that would come up, and that's why I was laughing.
Well, you kind of remind me of John Wayne when they did his autopsy. They found, I don't know how many pounds of undigested, meat in his stomach. And in your case, they would have probably...
Yeah.
Any particular bulb you like? I mean, do you like GE, Phillips, or...
Well, yeah, because, GE, you know what that stands for, good eating.
Yeah, I know.
And I usually eat 60-watt bulbs. I used to eat 100-watt bulbs, but I'm on a diet now. So, simple as that.
Okay. Well, which was...
Those are the jokes. It's just like comedy.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, and it doesn't tear your insides up? I know you take precautions, but I mean, this is the thought of it. Because I was always told eating popcorn could cause your appendix to burst if you ate enough popcorn, the kernels and stuff like that,
Anything, you have to be very careful. I mean, the challenge of it is this is part of the skill, I have to chew up the glass to a certain consistency. Simply put, if it's too fine, if it gets powdery, it could permeate the cell wall and get in my blood system. And bloodstream and, cause a stroke or a heart attack. If it's too large, the pieces could lacerate my intestinal tract. So it is this dance that I do each and every time that I eat a light bulb. That's why it scares me when I see people that are just flailing at it. And they may get away with it, but like I say, they're playing Russian roulette. They just don't know when they're going to do the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Yeah, we need to take a break, and we're going to be back with Todd right after the break. I'm wondering if he ever gets scanned going on an aircraft or anything, they go, "Oh my God, I see Phillips light bulbs." Anyway, we'll be right back with Todd. You're listening to Night Dreams Talk Radio.
Take a journey of adventure and discovery for the enigmatic giants of the forests. Read On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. The author himself describes it this way.
Having found possible Sasquatch evidence, namely trees driven into the ground upside down, thought to be territory markers, led me to investigate this creature in my native Ohio. Several years and many forays into Bigfoot territory, I have found incredible evidence, which inspired my book, On the Trail of Bigfoot. Bigfoot is alive and has many fantastic abilities. The evidence is out there for all to see, but you need to know what to look for. My book will inspire those who have answered the call to seek this elusive creature, the Bigfoot. The truth is out there.
Read On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. Available now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and IndieBound.org.
All right. Never takes excessive threats. I don't want to be against. I just want to tell you how you make this mistake. Listen to me, I am talking. I just want to tell this is really a mistake. I don't want to.
On Fridays, you can call in and talk to Gary and his guest. Gary will open the call lines at 8 p.m. Pacific Time each Friday. To call into the show south of the Rockies, the number is 1-253-203-6681. That's 1-253-203-6681. East of the Rockies, the number is 1-253-203-6777. That's 1-253-203-6777. Night Dreams Talk Radio brings back Bumper Music Fridays from emerging new bands. If you'd like to have your band's music played as bumper music on Night Dreams Talk Radio, it must be an original piece of music you or your band wrote, and you must give us a release to use it on air. Contact us at nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com or go to our show's website at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com and click on the message box.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
Night Dreams brings on the night worldwide. Did you know you can find us on your favorite app? And now you can watch us live on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to our channel and give us a thumbs up. And now, here's Gary.
And here I am. Well, hey, Todd, we are back. Yeah. How about, I got to ask you a couple questions here. How about people who swallow swords? I mean, how dangerous is that?
Well, it is very dangerous. It's the most difficult of all the old sideshow skills to learn, because you have to sort of train yourself on a sort of subconscious level and get your body used to the idea of putting a sword down your throat. Now, right here and now, when I say a sword, it's really basically a bar of metal. It is short, it's sword-shaped, but the edges are not sharp, and the end of it is, the point is usually rounded off a little bit, so it's not too sharp, because you have to be very, very careful. And it's all about alignment and relaxation, and you have to overcome the gag reflex. Now, I'll tell you right now, very few people start with a sword. Most, and the people I've taught how to do it, we start with a coat hanger, and we take a coat hanger and stretch it out in the outline of a sword. And the reason is because now it is much more pliable. It is lighter. It is thinner than a regular sword, and it's not going to do you any harm. It's rounded at the bottom and has the two sides there. And you do what's known as 7x7. The thing that's most important is alignment. Most people, when they start off, if they try to do it by themselves, they're not going to have much success, because you have to just find the right spot. That sword or that coat hanger has to be just in the right angle in order for it to be in the right place at the right time. And you have to trigger the gag reflex over and over again. And eventually your body goes, okay, you really want to do this? Fine. And the gag reflex goes away and the throat relaxes and will open up the sphincter that's at the back of your throat there, back of the mouth and down at the top of your throat, will open up, and then you can swallow it all the way down. And depending upon how far you go, it goes through another sphincter that goes into your stomach if you really are doing something very, very long. And once you do that and get used to that, then you have to switch to a sword, because no one has ever made a living as a professional coat hanger swallower. It doesn't exist. Sword swallowing is the name of the game. So then you have to find a sword in the right size, the right length and all that, and then get yourself used to that. And it can take months of daily practice before you can do it. And even then, almost every sword swallower that has done it for an extended period of time ends up hurting himself in one way or another. Hopefully it's a minor injury and not something that is life-threatening. But there was one sword swallower back at the turn of the last century who was in a rowdy venue, what they used to call a concert saloon. You know, the kind of places that when you see a Western and the cowboy rides up to a saloon, he gets off and he walks in, it's got a bar in the front, it's got dancing girls on the stage. Well, that's where vaudeville came from. That's with the early start of it. And it was a place where there were a lot of people drinking and a lot of things going on, and the crowds were very rowdy. And one guy swallowed a sword, and a guy jumped up on the stage saying, "That's fake," and punched him in the stomach. And he doubled over, and it ripped up his esophagus, and the guy was dead in about 4 minutes from internal bleeding. So that's a bad thing. You don't want to do that. So it is real. It is very dangerous. There's very little margin for error when it comes to sword swallowing. The problem with it is we've seen collapsible swords where they roll up or they fold up and things like that. And so people think it's got to be a trick, but it is a real skill.
How about fire eaters?
Well, that's another thing. You know, in school, we all learned the triangle of fire. The three things you need to have fire. You need heat, you need fuel, and you need oxygen. So what you do with fire eating is you basically put the fire in your mouth, you close the mouth, the oxygen burns off very, very quickly, and the fire goes out. That's the principle behind it. It's much more complicated than that, and yet that's the principle. And it's another thing. When you're doing that, you have to get used to it. You need this comfort and control as you're doing it. And because when you start to put fire in your face, your little monkey brain kicks in and goes, "This is a very bad idea." And you flinch. So you've got to really find a way and be taught properly so that you understand on some level very deep inside of you that this is something that can be done. And then once you overcome that hurdle, you can go on and do remarkable things. Where anyone who's been doing these things for a long time, usually there are three things. There's comfort, there's the comfort and the concentration and confidence, basically. And the problem is that when you lose concentration, when you've been doing it for a while and you're kind of going through the motions and you're thinking, okay, on the way home, I got to stop at the market and I got to get some eggs, we're out of eggs, we're out of milk. And when you lose your concentration and you're not really focused, that's when you get hurt.
Oh, wow. I mean, do they coat their mouths with something to help keep from, you know, burning their inside of their mouth?
There is a secret ingredient.
Not my wife's cooking,
that
I hope.
That every fire eater uses. It's called spit. The moisture in your mouth is a barrier, and it burns off before your flesh does, and it protects your mouth. So therefore, you can do things like what's known as a flame retention, where you actually can retain a flame in your mouth for a while until you feel that moisture barrier burn off, evaporate. And then you close your mouth and cut off the oxygen, and the fire goes out. And that's the basic secret. I love all this stuff because it seems so impossible. I got involved with magic when I was about 10 years old. A magic shop opened in our neighborhood in Los Alamitos, California. And I went in there because I really wanted to experience real magic, and quickly discovered that everything in there were tricks, wonderful tricks. But wonderful pieces of apparatus and equipment that was designed to deceive the senses and create the illusion of something extraordinary. And I saw all the magic I could. I'd watch it on TV. I'd go see magic shows whenever anyone was doing one. And when I was about 12 years old, a sideshow came to our neighborhood as part of a carnival. And I went in there to see the Master of Magic. He was one of the 10 acts and attractions live on the inside. And I went in, and the magic act wasn't that great, but the guy swallowing a sword, the guy eating fire, the person laying on a bed of nails and having someone stand on top of him, that's what kind of captured my attention and excited my imagination. And it occurred to me that what I was seeing was not trickery, was not deception, was reality at its most amazing. And was extraordinary ability beyond the capabilities of the average person, which is kind of a good definition of magic. So I went back to the local magic shop. It was around the corner from where this carnival was going on. And there were a bunch of old timers that used to hang out in the front room on Saturday afternoons. They'd sit around smoking unfiltered Camel cigarettes, doing card tricks and swapping lies. And I walked in there, and I used to hang out there and kind of soak up all the atmosphere and secondhand smoke. But I would listen to their stories, and I would learn tricks from them and hear about their experiences, which I just found fascinating. And I was late that day because I'd been to the carnival. And when I walked in, a guy said, where you been? I said, oh, I saw the most amazing thing. It was a sideshow, and there was a guy doing this and this and this. And then I uttered words that changed my life, which I said, I'd really like to learn how to do that, that kind of thing. And one of the guys had worked in a sideshow. And he said, oh, you want to learn the dangerous stuff, huh, kid? Okay, I can teach you, but don't tell your parents. And I thought that was the greatest thing I'd ever heard. And so he taught me how to eat fire and hammer a nail into my nose.
A what? In your nose?
Yeah, it's a classic act known as the human blockade act. And these days, everyone is kind of used to it because everyone's done the COVID test and you're shoving things up your nose. But we take like a 6-inch, 60-penny nail and hammer it into the nose, and it goes straight back in your nasal pharynx into the top of your throat. And it's an amazing thing. It looks absolutely impossible. It looks like it has to be a trick, but it's 100% real. So I learned how to do this, and then I asked him where he had learned it, where these things came from. And because I approached it, with an appreciation and respect, he started opening doors for me and introducing me to other performers. And one of them was a guy who did an act where he ate things. He ate razor blades. He'd bite into a tin can and kind of rip it open and chew on some of that. And he would eat flowers and lit cigarettes and matches and all sorts of stuff. And light bulbs. He would bite into glass. And he taught me the technique for doing this, which I'm using to this day.
Oh, wow. I got to ask you a question, though. Even if you're taking a nail, and you're a 6-inch nail or whatever your size nail you were saying, and because, you know, I have COVID. I still have it. I'm doing much better right now. But just thinking about having something stuck in my nose, you know, more than a half inch freaked me out, let alone taking a nail and taking a hammer and driving it in. I mean, what happens if you miscalculate? I mean, are you going to rupture your sinus, or is it going to go into your brain?
It could, yeah. If you don't know what you're doing, it could do that, because most people have a brain up there, and it is, there's
unless
a very fine
a
membrane. When it goes back into the top of the throat there, I'm kind of poking at a membrane, and right behind that is my brain, the stem to my brain right there. So you have to be very, very careful. Again, you have to know what you're doing. I don't encourage anyone to give this a try. However, having said that, if you're listening to this and you're kind of feeling the same way I felt when I was a kid, in Coney Island here in New York, back in 2001, I started up a sideshow school, teaching people the proper way, because I saw a number of people who were doing these things wrong and didn't have the proper technique. And I realized I could probably teach people in a classroom setting. And at the sideshow, which is one of the last sideshows in the world in Coney Island, every year in August, we do a sideshow school in which people come from all around the country, around the world, to learn how to hammer a nail into their nose, how to walk over broken bottles in their bare feet, swallow swords, eat fire, and things like that. And it is about the only place you can learn the proper techniques, unless you know someone who knows what they're doing. The good news is you kind of learn the full spectrum of it. Usually, most sideshow performers in the past would do like one or two things, and I learned how to do so many of them from so many different guys through the years that I took all this and started up this school. I don't actually teach the school anymore. It's done by a guy named Adam Rin, who is the artistic director out in Coney Island now, who was one of my students back about 20 years ago. And he's now sort of running things out there, and I'm one of the advisors.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I was in board members out in Coney Island, sort of the elder statesman these days. And if you want to do that, sorry about that, I'm surrounded by dogs here. I know, Gary, you have dogs. I have the four Pomeranians of the apocalypse, and they're quiet right now. They're kind of sleeping, but every once in a while they wake up and have to let the world know that they exist. Anyway, so if you go to ConeyIsland.com, it's as simple as that, ConeyIsland.com, and you'll see all of the things we do in the sideshow, the burlesque show, the museum, the Coney Island Museum, and so much more out there. And there is a little tab for Sideshow School, and you can get information if you want to learn how to be a professional lunatic. We'll take care of you.
Well, you know, I have trouble sleeping. I got a bad back. And, you know, I have not found a mattress, Todd, in all these years that I could lay comfortably on my back. I have to always lay on my side. As soon as I lay on my back, it hurts. Now, what do you think of a bed of nails?
Well, that's the funny thing. You should bring this up. I have done many, many things, as you kind of heard in that introduction. I've done many things during the 40-some years that I've been performing. And one of which is working with circuses, not only working in Coney Island, the sideshow, but working in various circuses. And there was a Russian acrobat. This guy was just pure muscle. And he'd been doing it for years and was just, I actually came around a corner one time and bumped into him and broke my thumb on his chest. That's how strong this guy was. Just, and he was doing an act in which he had three people standing on top of him, you know, on his shoulders, and then another person on their shoulders, another person on their shoulders as they were launched off of a teeter board, like a big seesaw. And his back was bothering him. And he said, oh, this is what we do in Russia. And he brought out this thing that looked like barbed wire. And he would lay down on it. And I went, this is like a bed of nails. And he goes, it's very, very good. Because what it does is all those little points stimulate blood flow to the muscles and help, help healing and help loosen up stiff muscles because of that blood flow. Because it's those little points of irritation. It's completely counterintuitive, but it actually is very beneficial if you have a bad back.
Yeah, but how can you lay on without being punctured? I could imagine just laying with one nail or a dozen or two, but I don't know how many nails are used in these bed of nails. But
Hundreds. Here's the thing. The sideshow skills are all based upon principles of physics and anatomy. And since most people slept through physics and anatomy in school, they seem miraculous. The fact is, if you were to lay down on one nail, the point, you would be so much pressure on that one point, it would puncture your skin. Though I have to tell you, having said that, I do have a friend named Harley Newman who has perfected the one nail bed of nails. And he actually can suspend himself with one nail sticking into his back. It is the most dangerous thing ever. But he does it. I think he's the only person in the world that does it. Anyway, getting back to regular bed of nails, it is counterintuitive. You look at all those nails and think that every point there is enough to kill you. However, when you lay down, the weight is distributed on all those points. And because of that, there's not enough pressure on any one of them to puncture into your flesh and do serious damage to you. So that's the secret. Again, it's physics, the distribution of weight over many points as opposed to just one.
Wouldn't it take a lot of
hard work learning how to get on the bed of nails without punching yourself? I get on the bed. The first thing I do is I put my big butt down on the mattress, then lift my leg up over and get comfortable. I mean, how do you get onto the bed without hurting yourself?
Well, you kind of have to roll down to make sure that you distribute the weight just right. If you do it too fast or do it too slow, you can do injury. You can cause injury to yourself. But just knowing the exact, you kind of sit on the edge of it, you know, wearing trousers to keep the end of it there. And then with your bare flesh, you can roll back down on it. And if you do it just right, it's not going to do any harm to you. So much so that you can have actually someone stand on top of you. Again, Harley Newman, this guy I was telling you about, he does a bed of nails in which he has 7 people stand on top of him.
7?
At one time. Yes, 7.
Now, we're not talking 7 dwarfs here, are we?
No, no, okay. We're talking full people standing, everything from the someone on his forehead and the top of his chest, his stomach down to his legs, to basically standing on his feet as he is laying on a full length, 7-foot-long bed of nails.
Boy, do they have to get tetanus shots every so often?
Well, it does make a definite impression on you, I'll say that.
Yeah, it would. Could you imagine you meet a nice woman, you go, hey, you want to come to my apartment? I got a bed of nails.
There you go. Yeah, you know,
you get the point?
I jokingly, when I would do the blockhead years ago, I would hammer a nail in my nose, and you know, people would, and I'd make some jokes about it, and I'd say, if I ever meet a woman who actually enjoys seeing me do this, I will marry her on the spot. And I did, actually. My wife loves this kind of stuff. She's from a show business family. Her parents were puppeteers that were neighbors on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and from a number of years and had done a number of different things in show business. So she came from this background. So when she met this guy that could eat glass and hammer a nail into his nose, and she said to her mom and dad, she said, I'm seeing someone. And they said, yeah. I said, yeah, he swallows swords and eats fire. And her mother said, oh, thank goodness. I thought you were going to marry a lawyer.
Oh. Well, you know, a friend of mine who's been, like I mentioned before we went on the air, Ron Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
You know, some of the
Master
stuff.
Master of mystery himself.
Yeah. Some of the stuff, like we were talking, you know, he had a coffin. He would put his assistant in this coffin and then set it on fire with her in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of this stuff, or you know,
you go through a lot of assistance that way. But you know, there's a lot of people who want to be in show business, so you just line them up.
Yeah. Now, can you tell the listeners what you told me that you took it one step farther?
Yeah. You see, I have loved magic. I've loved seances. I've loved all kinds of the darker things. In many ways, you know, the movie that's out right now, Nightmare Alley, that Guillermo del Toro has directed, is a story about a guy who starts in a carnival in a sideshow and then goes on and does seances. And I'm sort of living that because that's sort of my trajectory. I've started out doing magic and working in sideshows, and now I do many of the sideshow things. And I did a show a while back called Play Dead, which I wrote with Teller of Penn & Teller. Me in it, and it was basically what's known as a spook show, which is a dark magic show. It was all very twisted, and at one point I'd bring a guy up from the audience. I would put him into a large rendering vat, this big metal vat. I'd have him lay down there in the vat, and I'd say, no, just play dead, just try to look dead. And I go, I'm sorry, here, let me help you. And I would take a crowbar and I'd bash in his skull and then pour onto his corpse a sulfuric acid, which would reduce everything down to a skeletal remains with just some meat on the bone and a bit of goo, blood and organs and things like that. And then take all of that huge vat of stuff and open a trap door on the stage and then pour it all out. And you'd see the whole thing just kind of cascade out into the trap door. And then I'd close the trap door and go on with the show.
Did it, people not, scream?
Not restore him.
Hmm? Did you have the audience screaming?
Oh, yeah. They didn't know what the heck was going on. There were a number of times that we had people practically passing out from all the things we did, which was, you know, the theme of the show is you're never so alive as when you're scared to death.
Oh, yeah. Well, I you've taken that farther than what my friend Ron does with the flaming casket. I tell you, that would be, I don't know if I could sit there without passing out.
Well, it's the kind of thing that people think there's going to see a, you know, a little fun magic show, and then we do that. And what's fun is that we don't, there's no ta-da moment. It is just like, you know, when you do a show called Playdate, you get to kill one person, at least one. And I kind of move the thing, all the equipment off, and sitting on stage is like, what did we just see someone murder someone? What are we looking at? And it makes people wonder in a very, very good way. It was a very, very entertaining, lovely, dark show.
Well, I tell you this, a lot of the people in the audience, they probably wouldn't want to go up on stage because they don't want to be classified as a dead audience member.
Oh, you can say that again. It was the kind of thing that after you do something like that and you go back down the audience to bring someone else up, they pay attention. They're no one is acting up. They're very compliant because they're not quite sure what the heck is going to go on. And we did all sorts of wonderful seance things in there, and basically necromancy, bringing the dead back to life, and just to terrorize the audience. It was a lot of fun bringing back as old. There was a awful man named Albert Fish, who was a serial killer back in the 1920s, who had heard voices in his head that told him to kill and consume the flesh of children. and we bring him back to life and let him loose into the audience in the dark, which you want to talk about screams. Yes, it was quite a terrorizing experience, but in the most joyously fun way.
It sounds like it. Now, we're going to take about a five-minute break. And believe me, after this, I need that five-minute break to recompose myself before we go back.
Oh, we're just getting started. We're going into the dark side now.
Yeah, oh, we are. But when we come back, I want to find out how you can walk on glass. I tried that once also, and it didn't work out. Of course, I didn't know what I was doing. Then I want to get into seances and all that stuff, you know. And, well, I have a lot of fun, so we'll be back with Todd right after this again. Well, maybe you want to pour yourself a stiff drink, because I tell you, it's going to get really interesting. We'll be back right after this, so stay tuned. Under the rain, when you held my hand, tell me when did it start? The stars looking so bright, as I never saw them the way I see tonight. I gave you
He's one of paleontology's top fossil restorers. He's Joe Taylor, and his unique expertise has been used on many world-class fossils, including the world's largest molds of fossils still in the ground, such as the three complete mammoth skeletons at the Waco Sudden Death Mammoth Site in Waco, Texas. 40 years working in every area of fossils has opened the door to the strange mystery of giant men and the biblical Nephilim, which has opened the door to Bigfoot, UFOs, Mothman, and much more. Joe Taylor's book, Giants Against Evolution, chronicles all of these. You can order Joe's books at www.mtblanco.com or call 806-675-7777. That's 806-675-7777. Joe Taylor's incredible museum is currently adding new and amazing displays. Find out more at www.mtblanco.com. Take a journey of adventure and discovery for the enigmatic giants of the forests. Read On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. The author himself describes it this way.
Having found possible Sasquatch evidence, namely trees driven into the ground upside down, thought to be territory markers, led me to investigate this creature in my native Ohio. Several years and many forays into Bigfoot territory, I have found incredible evidence, which inspired my book, On the Trail of Bigfoot. Bigfoot is alive and has many fantastic abilities. The evidence is out there for all to see, but you need to know what to look for. My book will inspire those who have answered the call to seek this elusive creature, the Bigfoot. The truth is out there.
Read On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. Available now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and IndieBound.org.
Hi, this is Tom Davis with Metatron Power and Light. You're listening to Gary Anderson and Night Dreams Talk Radio.
Night Dreams Talk Radio brings you talk radio like you remember with your host, Gary Anderson.
Hey, that is me, but after talking to Todd, I don't even know who I am, and maybe I don't even care after this point. I got to ask you a question. Walking on glass, I tried that too, probably when I was probably about 10, 11 years old. I got in a bet with a bunch of people at summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
And we took a whole bunch of, like, Pepsi bottles and all those type of bottles, and we broke them up, and we were seeing who was, well, man enough or boy enough to try walking across them barefooted. I think I made it about a foot before I sliced my foot open and it literally almost cut my whole big toe off. How can you walk on glass without, well, killing yourself?
Well, again, it depends upon the kind of glass. That's the real secret to it. You know, it depends. I mean, if it's like light bulb glass, it's very, very thin and it will lacerate. But you get into Pepsi bottles, you get into wine bottles, champagne bottles, it's thicker glass and it's a little less dangerous. You also have to do a certain amount of it, because that is the other thing that, like the bed of nails, it is a factor of physics, that if you have enough glass there, there's enough points on the bottom of a foot that it's not going to lacerate the foot. You have to also know how to step onto the glass, how to really go kind of flat-footed. Most people kind of stand on their tiptoes because they don't want their foot to come in contact with it, and that puts more weight on the ball, on the toes, and increases the chance of actually doing harm to the foot. But if you do it flat-footed and you do it just right and you just lower it down and you move the foot back and forth a little bit, so if there's any point that is a little too sharp, you can kind of move it to the side, make it kind of lean over to one side, and you can find that sweet spot. You can actually walk, and once you get really, really good at it, you can do what I do, and which a number of people do, in which you can jump up and down on the broken glass, because you have this skill that is developed, that you have basically a split second. What I was talking about, putting your foot on the glass and finding the sweet spot of the where it's not going to hurt you, you can actually develop the ability to jump, and as soon as you come down, adjust immediately within a split second so that you don't end up hurting your feet.
Interesting. How about people who walk on fire or hot lava or, you know, stones or, you know, stuff like that or, you know, or something
yeah,
that's
I mean,
been...
again, there are scientific principles behind it. When you start getting into, you know, walking or burning coals, it's often done as a motivational thing. Tony Robbins has made that his sort of signature thing that he'll get people riled up and then do a fire walk, bring everyone outside of the convention center and have them walk over the fire. And there are things about it. Now, when you get into that, A, it's fire and it's you got to know what you're doing. There's certain kinds of coals that you walk over, some that you want to do and some that you don't want to do, certain materials that burn hotter. And it is hot, but there's also very much like the I was talking about fire eating earlier with the moisture barrier that's in your mouth. There is a bit of moisture barrier in your skin that will keep you from actually hurting yourself. But again, you got to know what you're doing. You have to has to be set up just right. And then you just have to, once you know what you're doing, just do it. But that's an oversimplification. Again, I'm not trying to encourage anyone to give this a try.
I wouldn't. You know, I've been in radio going on 49 years. You know, and some of the smaller radio stations I worked in the past, I actually had, because I had to work on the transmitters and all this stuff. And there was this one radio station I was at. There was an old-time engineer. Now, you know, these transmitters, you know, tens of thousands of volts. But no, he wouldn't do anything with the tens of thousands of volts, but he would go up to the 220, 240 power line, and he would take his two fingers, one finger on each hand, and just put it right on the live feed and go 1, 2, 3, 4. And, you know, boom, he'd take it off. There was no smoke, no burns. And he convinced me one time to try it with 120 volts, and it threw me against the wall. Mm-hmm. And then I said, okay, Einar, that was his, he was...
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Norwegian, I said, how are you doing? He goes, ha ha, my skin is so calloused.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he did it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are... You know, it's amazing when you see people who work in restaurants and they'll grab a hot dish and they've just been, the chefs and cooks, they've been doing it for so long, it just builds up calluses on their flesh, and they can grab a hot plate and throw it out there or a hot pan, and it would cause blisters in most people. But they, again, they build up the callus on the flesh, and it's a little bit of armor, sort of a little Kevlar. That it is those layers of dead skin there.
Oh, yeah. Now, you know, one time I went to a fortune teller, and this is before I've been married a lot of times, but I've been married now going on 45 years, something like that, to the same lady. But before that, I got married a couple of times. And I went to this fortune teller one time. And she said, oh, you're going to meet this beautiful woman you're going to have. She's going to be, you know, it's going to last your whole life. And, you know, everything seemed to match. I met this beautiful blonde. She was a former Miss Washington. We got married. I found out she was a Wiccan or a witch. And I'll tell you, it lasted 2.5 years. It wasn't anything like that fortune teller told me. If there was a living hell... I suffered it for 2.5 years. Going into, well, you know, not fortune telling, but going to seances and stuff like that. What is actually a seance?
Well, a seance is a gathering of people. It actually is the French word for a sitting. And you gather people around, and they can take a number of different forms. The most known is sort of the Hollywood version, people sitting around a table holding hands, turning out the lights, and the dead come forth and swirl around. And there's a lot of fraud in the world of seances, and a lot of people who talk to the dead and things like that. And yet, beyond that, there are, if you delve into it long enough, which I know you have because you've been at this for so many, many years, you get into areas that cannot be dismissed as just trickery, deception, and cannot be dismissed as delusion, people just imagining things or are mistaken in their perceptions of things. And there are thousands and thousands of anecdotal evidence, examples, episodes, whatever you want to call it, stories that people will tell of having an experience that really defies an easy explanation of, you know, in the one of those two camps, that someone's either deceiving them or they're deceiving themselves. And those are the ones that I find most interesting. Just recently, I did a show off Broadway, and it was called Haunt Quest. And a friend of mine runs a theater in Lower Manhattan, the Soho area of Manhattan. It's called the Soho Playhouse. And it is in a building that's about 200 years old. And there have been a number of ghost sightings in this building through the years by a number of people who don't know each other, which I find rather intriguing. People that don't know each other, haven't heard the stories, having a similar experience. And having learned a number of these stories, I've decided to put away the tricks, put away the deception, and play with what I refer to as retro-paranormal techniques. The techniques that have been used for some of them go back 150 years, some of them go back centuries in terms of things like pendulums and spirit glass, which is the forerunner of the Ouija board, and trance, a lot of hypnotic trance, to kind of open up and see what could be discovered in this building, kind of do a ghost hunt, but not with equipment, not with EM meters, not with EVPs or anything like that, but using these wonderful old techniques that all rely upon whoever shows up that evening in the experience that we were doing. I hesitate saying a performance, but I guess you could call it that. And it's amazing whoever would show up, both living and dead. And we had some remarkable things. The evening would start off with, drinking a little water here. We would do this upstairs. There was sort of the old living quarters of the building that had been made into this big open loft. It was sort of like an art gallery space. And it was all, white and hardwood floors and very, very clean and pristine. Not a haunted house kind of vibe whatsoever. And we could get about 25 people in that space, socially distanced, everyone wearing masks, because this was in April, when COVID was still, very prevalent, but things were improving at that point. And we could get these people in the room, spaced out, and I would kind of take them down into the experience, set the expectations just right, and then put them into a light trance. And some people would go, I'd find just the right people in the room every night, three of them or four of them. I'd bring them up. I'd put them in trance. I would have them feel themselves descending into the darkness, into the void, reaching the spot between the world of the living and the dead, and stand on one side and reach out into the darkness and bring someone to them. They would encounter someone dead. And they would see them, they would hear them. I would ask them questions that they would ask the dead. We'd find out who they were, when they died, how old they were, when they lived, if they had a relationship with the building, why they were there. And then as the presence became very, very strong, I would have the entity step into the living, possess them, and I could talk directly to the dead through the living. And it was fascinating. It was remarkable what would come through, but there were a number of evenings where things happened that, you know, it's very easy to look at this and go, oh, it's just a flight of imagination. Put someone in a trance and they imagine things. And yet some information came through that really transcended that and went so far beyond. We would have people in the room that would be having a similar experience, two different people encountering the same entity. There was one evening I had a woman sitting in the sort of the back, and she was in trance, and I said, someone is going to come to you. And a woman in front of her, sitting in front of her, started laughing. And I looked at her, because once again, cynicism can poison the well and just destroy an experience like this. And she was very, the woman was very apologetic. It was very clear that there was nothing, nothing really dark about this, nothing cynical about this. Her laughter, she was just startled and laughed. And I asked the woman behind her, I said, who do you see? And she said, a little girl. And the woman laughed again. I looked at her. And I said, she's coming to you. And the woman kind of laughed. And she was very apologetic. It was very clear this woman that was laughing was going through something. And she knew it was being kind of disruptive. And she was very apologetic. And the little girl came to this woman. And we didn't get a name. The little girl kept reaching out and holding the woman's hands, and then would reach over and hug her, and then reach the hands and hug her. And I didn't get much information other than there was a little girl there. And afterwards, the woman that was laughing came up to me. She said, I'm very, very sorry. But I was just sitting there, and you said someone is going to come to you. And I saw a little girl in front of me. And she had long blonde hair, and she was wearing like a white dress, and it had a blue ribbon around her waist, and she was holding a basket of red flowers. And when you said, she's going to come to you, she walked right through me, and that's when I laughed again. And then when the woman said that she saw a little girl, that just so startled me. And I was like, okay. And I thought that was sort of strange. And then I went to the woman who didn't know the woman in front at all. We were all kind of hanging out afterwards, and people were talking about the experience they'd had. And I went to the other woman who had had the encounter, and I said, so we didn't get much out of the little girl. She said, no, she just kind of reached over and grabbed my hands, and then she would hug me and then hold on to my hands. And I said, what did she look like? And she said, well, she had long blonde hair and was wearing like a white dress with a blue ribbon around her waist. And I went, okay. Now I'm thinking to myself, that's kind of generic. It's sort of an Alice in Wonderland image, and that's okay. But I said to her, I said, was she holding flowers? And she said, no, no, no. She put the flowers down when she reached out for my hands.
Wow.
And there's a poltergeist that has been experienced by a number of the staff members through the years. Down in the basement, they have a little cabaret space in the theater. And it was a speakeasy back in the 1920s. And there is a poltergeist they refer to as Buster. Because when the regular theater manager takes the night off and puts someone else in charge, glasses get knocked off the bar. And that's why they call him Buster, because he breaks things. And the toilets in the basement, even though they're in perfect shape, they've been checked out time and time again, they overflow. Again, nothing wrong with them whatsoever, but they overflow whenever Buster starts to act up. So this one night, we're doing this, and there's a man in trance. And I say, who is there? And he said, it's a man, and he's saying his name is Robert. I go, all right. And Robert, what's your last name? Please tell this man. And he said, Anton, Robert Anton. I go, oh, okay. And I said, you know, when did you die? 1931. Where did you die? Brooklyn. And why are you here? And he said, I'm just here to have fun. I'm just here to have fun. I like having fun here. I'm just here to have fun. It was like very, very defensive. I'm just here to have fun. And something occurred to me. And I said, Robert, are you Buster? He said, yes, I am. I said, you're the one that knocks over things? He says, yeah, I'm just having fun. I'm like, okay. All right, fine. So I say to the manager, the guy who runs the theater, who was my friend, the next day, I said, well, we had kind of a wild one. Buster came through. And he said, what? He said, Buster came through. And I said, his real name is Robert. And he said, okay, who told you to say that? I said, no one. He said, what do you mean? I said, no one. That's what the guy said. The guy said his name is Robert Anton. And he comes and he's Buster. And he said, I was the first one to encounter this entity down in the basement. And I don't know why, but I always called him Robert. I always called him Bob. And I would like, knock it off, Bob. Knock it off, Robert. I don't know why, but I'd always use that name. And that's wild. And then I went home, did a little research, and I found his obituary. That he actually, and this the guy who I was talking to had no contact with this. He didn't know this person, never met this person. And there were things like that that happened. We did this every night. And I kind of kept a journal of all the entities that came through. And often there was very, very sad stories. Often I would ask them when they would possess the living, I would say, are you there by yourself or are there others with you? And often they'd say they're by themselves. I'd say, what is death like? Are you there by yourself? And they said they're by themselves. And I'd say, are you lonely? And they would sometimes say, yes. And I became sort of like the Dr. Phil of the dead. I'd say, who do you want to reach out to? And someone would say, like, my mother or my wife or whatever. And some of these entities were, you know, 200 years old. And I would say, well, just as you have come to us, your presence now is like a beacon and they're coming to you. You sense them. Your mother is coming to you. Do you sense her? What is her name? What is her name? Martha. Martha is coming to you. Do you sense her? Open yourself up. And they would encounter the dead parent or a loved one and be reunited and find peace. And we're able to literally, we release them and they would go and rest in peace. And I just love doing this. It was just such a wild experience. And I have no idea what it is. I have no idea. It is a mystery. And I love that about it.
Does it scare you, though?
Does the thought of this scare you? No, not at all. Not at all. And we had one experience that was, we had a number of dark people that came through, a number of dark entities. And I would just stand flat foot and say, you're not welcome here. I'm sorry, you have to go. One happened, there was one night and there was a guy in trance. And I said, someone is coming to you. You can see him. Is it a man or woman? He said, it's a man. And I said, what is his name? Ask him his name. He'll tell you his name. And he's saying, Arkansas. Like, Arkansas? Are you hearing that clearly? He said, yes. He's saying he's Arkansas. He's saying it loudly. I can hear it very clearly. His name is Arkansas. And a woman sitting on the other side of the room became very agitated. And we're sitting in this room, and it's bathed in red light. The red light seance is something that it is a very, very old tradition. So we're sitting there, and she's kind of in the shadows in the red light there, and she's getting very agitated and said, he has to go. He has to go. Tell Arkansas to leave. He has to leave. He has to leave right now. He's a very bad man. He has to go. He has to leave. Like, oh, okay, all right, all right, all right, fine. She said, no, he has to go now. Like, all right. I said, I'm sorry. Arkansas, you have to go. You have to go. Is he going? He said, he's not leaving. I said, you have to leave. You have to leave, and you have to leave now. Go, Arkansas, now. And he left. Afterwards, the woman came up, this older woman who was getting very agitated. She came up and said, I'm very sorry, but as soon as he started to see him, I saw Arkansas, and I could hear what he was saying. He said his name was Arkansas and that he was a former slave and he had murdered four people and he was coming there to kill someone in the room tonight. Okay. All right. And then I went to the man and I said, I know we didn't have much of an encounter, but tell me about Arkansas. And he said, he seemed angry. He was an African-American and he seemed very angry. Okay. Okay. And that entity came through again. Again, a couple weeks later, someone else said there is this man, African, and it was an African American woman who was in this very light trance. I didn't even put her fully in. And she said, there's a dark man here, and he's saying he's here to hurt someone. He's dressed in kind of in rags, and he said he's here to kill someone. And I said, okay, I know who this is, and you have to leave. And so we've had things like that happen. And, you know, when we finish, people, it's a little unnerving, and people would sometimes stick around and talk a little bit, and other people would just kind of get up and walk out, and I would never know what experience they really had. And then a week ago, I'm doing another show, lovely magic show called Speakeasy Magic at the McKittrick Hotel in New York. And it's a wonderful evening of close-up magic, and it's just exquisite, lovely, lovely evening. And there was a woman there, and I'm walking through. I hosted, I created the show. And we have tables all around the room that have magicians that sit down and do close-up sleight-of-hand magic. And then they switch off, and so you see a number of different magicians through the course of the evening. And there's a lot of surprises in the whole thing. And I was walking by, and a woman said, "I saw your other show, and you hypnotized me." And I went, oh, wonderful. She said, yeah. I said, who did we make contact with? She said her name was Barbara, and she had just died, and we went home, and we found her obituary. And I went, wonderful.
Hey, Todd, wonderful. Our time is up. Is there anything you want to share here? You got a couple minutes? Go ahead and...
Sure. Know. Well, let's just say I have a podcast called Abnormalcy that I've been doing for a while, and it's true stories. I did a TV series called True Nightmares. I hosted a TV series called True Nightmares on Investigation Discovery for a couple of seasons. And when that was finished, there were a bunch of stories I had, and I started doing a podcast called Abnormal. So you can find it wherever podcasts are to be heard. You can go to abnormalcypodcast.com and find the website for it. And if you like this broadcast, I think you'll really enjoy it because it's all true tales that are very twisted and fun. And then follow me on, to find out what I'm doing, follow me on Instagram, Todd Robbins NYC, all one word, TODDROBBINS NYC. I put up a lot of content there that kind of tells you about things like Speakeasy Magic, the show that we're doing in New York, exquisite evening of magic. And there's a couple of things swirling around, another TV series in the works, and a number of other things, including at the McKittrick, which is the home to a show called Sleep No More, big immersive theater show. There's a rumor going around that hidden away in the bowels of the building is my own private seance room, where all sorts of things happen in the dark. So I encourage everyone to kind of follow what I do on, yeah, and I'm on Facebook also, Todd Robbins, you'll find me. And let's keep this going, because I'm exploring all kinds of wonderful darkness, and who knows what we'll find.
Well, Todd, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I really enjoyed it, I tell you that. I don't know if I'm going to be able to sleep tonight, but I tell you, I really enjoyed having you on.
Well, if you want me to, Gary, I'll come over. I'll tuck you in and stand there in the dark and watch you sleep.
No, thank you. I have a bad enough time listening to my wife snore all night. I don't need anything more in excitement.
I understand.
Okay, Todd, well, you have a good one, will you?
Thank you so much, Gary. It's a pleasure.
Okay, you take care, my friend. Well, tomorrow we're going to be talking about Planet X. And I tell you, it's going to be really, really interesting. In the news today, they found another planet that they didn't even know it was there, and it was in plain sight. So make sure you tune in tomorrow. Tell your friends about our show. Make sure you give us a thumbs up. That's very important. And if you haven't subscribed to our channel, please do. You can find us on iHeart, TuneIn, everywhere on the internet. Our average listenership is right around 5 million plus downloads on each show. And I want to thank you, the listener, because that has been a big thing, you know, for all these years on the internet. YouTube is still fairly new to us, so we're working on building that one up. Well, till tomorrow, everybody have a good one. We will catch you on the other side of the coin. Everybody take care.
All around, the music is really